Medical Mutual wants to remind you it's almost time for Medicare's annual enrollment period. As a trusted health insurer for more than 90 years, Medical Mutual is here to help you find better Medicare benefits. Be confident you're getting the most from your Medicare Advantage plan. Schedule your free Medicare plan review today at medmutual.com/review. Medical Mutual, Ohio's hometown Medicare insurer.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Hi, friends. As I've mentioned previously, I'm now starting my short segments of missing, murdered, and unidentified Asian persons in the United States. Why am I doing this? Because I want to contribute in a different way. Every case I've discussed so far has been to open our eyes as to what is happening in parts of Asia or cases involving Asians. Many times it can be tied to how culture works, the way people were raised, and other factors. But over the many years I've spent doing this side hobby of mine, I've realized that there is way more to crime. I can say that I've been fortunate enough to not have been affected by violent crimes personally. To many of us, these cases feel very far removed, and some of the way these crimes are carried out are unfathomable. But that does not mean it does not affect real people out there, and some of them are still looking for answers. Over the years, the ethics involving true crime has come up again and again. And while it was never my intention initially to make this fun, I can understand how it can be perceived as a form of quote-unquote entertainment. This is not a judgment on anyone, as I listen to various podcasts as well, while I'm commuting, doing chores, or just going to bed. As fascinating as these cases can be, I just wanted to lend a hand to my community and maybe bring some peace, some type of answer to anyone who might be looking for one. If you or anyone you know have a missing or murdered loved one in the U.S. who happens to be Asian, please do let me know, and I would be more than happy to cover it. Today we will be discussing a young woman named Sunyeol Lee, who also went by the name Julie. Julie was a Korean immigrant born sometime in the year 1954. During the mid-1970s, Julie and her then husband moved to the United States from South Korea. Over time, their marriage dissolved, and Julie eventually met her then-boyfriend, a man by the name of Tim Conrad. The two lived in Alaska for a while, working on fishing boats. In 1988, the couple then moved down to Washington State, residing in Bothell, a city northeast of Seattle, close to the northern tip of Lake Washington. I don't believe Julie had a lot of support in her life, and, as an immigrant, she had a tough time adjusting. For one thing, she did not speak fluent English, and that could have hindered her chances at assimilating and finding work. Despite facing a tough time, Julie would continue to look, and every week she would show up at the local food bank to get food for her and Tim. It was reported that she also had a few run-ins with the law, including prostitution and third-degree theft. It is not believed that she was ever convicted for these crimes, though. For many people around her, mostly acquaintances, they saw her as a quiet and pleasant woman. This absolutely fits the stereotype of Asian women in general, who are thought to be quiet, polite, and meek. But there was another side of her when she was with her boyfriend. It could be from frustrations in her life, difficulties in her relationship, or perhaps an untreated mental illness. But Julie would turn to alcohol for comfort, and when she drank, she would have angry fights with her boyfriend, Tim. This was corroborated by her then-apartment managers, Bill and Joanne Sparks. When these fights took place, Julie would angrily leave their apartment, get on a bus to Seattle, disappear for a few days, and then return home. Sometimes she would say she's going back to South Korea, but that was never the case. On June 25, 1990, another angry fight broke out in the apartment. Julie was frustrated and told Tim that she was leaving to Seattle again to find work. This time, though, she never returned. Because of the many times Julie took off for days at a time, Tim was not initially concerned when she did not return. But as days turned into too many days, he began to wonder, and on July 6, about 11 days after she last left their apartment, he filed a missing persons report to the local police. As listeners of true crime, you know that the husband, the spouse, the partner, tends to always be the person of interest. Not only was Tim questioned, the police also questioned Julie's ex-husband. Both were said to have been cooperative, and since both men claimed to not have anything to do with her disappearance, they were both let go. Of course, Julie was still missing, so their priority at the time was to locate her. Fast forward to March 26, 1991. A grim discovery was made off Highbridge Road in the Snoqualmie River Ravine by a county road worker. It was not a body, but simply a scalp that belonged to a man, and the scalp had curly brown hair attached to it, as well as an ear. This was an alarming discovery, but if you find one part of a human, it's likely that there are other parts in the vicinity as well. Police began to search the area, and on the following day, a woman's skull was discovered not too far from where the scalp was found. These two did not belong to each other, and the police confirmed that the skull belonged to that of Julie. Her purse was also found near her skull. Despite not having her other body parts, it was revealed that her head had been hit with blunt force trauma, which was very likely her cause of death. Forensics also placed her time of death to be at least 6 months, as her skull's decomposition matched that of 6 months in that area. Think of bugs, weather, humidity, and such factors. Those impact how fast or how slow a human body decomposes in certain areas, especially out in the elements. So while this was not a happy ending for Julie's loved ones, they had found a part of her and they were able to positively identify her. The biggest question we have then is, who killed her? A very infamous serial killer in Washington State was active around that time. A man named Gary Ridgway, also known as the Green River Killer. After Ridgway was apprehended, he denied knowing or killing Julie, and after some thorough police work, law enforcement also did not believe Ridgway was responsible for Julie's death. Despite not being the victim of the Green River Killer, police did believe that she was a victim of another serial killer, also known as the Dismemberment Murders. I have never heard of this, but at the time Julie's skull was discovered, the police had two other murders that had similar traits to Julie's, including the scalp found near her skull. That man's leg was found in the vicinity as well, and another man named Stoyan Jelimov, whose dismembered body was found in 1987, also shared similar traits to Julie and the other man. Basically, all three victims were dismembered. Was there really a serial killer in the 80s and 90s who went around killing people and dismembering them? Or were they individual cases that just happened to share similarities? As this is a cold case, there isn't a lot of updates. And one article from 2009 stated, quote, "We've never been able to link her with any remains found in the same area," unquote. In other words, parts of her could still be out there, just never found. Or someone found them, but they were never linked back to her skull. This case is more than 30 years old, so understandably, getting new information is not the easiest. In case you're unaware, there is this thing called the cold case cards, which are basically your regular playing cards with spades, clubs, hearts, and diamonds, but each of them has an unsolved case on it. It contains a photograph of a victim and general information on the victim. Most states have their own version of these playing cards, featuring local cases. These cards are then issued out to inmates of the state prison, and if any of them have any information on a victim, they can offer up information to help arrest and convict a perpetrator. I believe rewards are available, or maybe they can negotiate deals, but don't quote me on that. Julie's case was featured on Washington State Snohomish County's first set of cold case cards, on the Five of Clubs. As of today, 6 of the 52 cards from that set have been resolved. It's not a lot, but we can definitely work to get more solved. With that said, if you have any information regarding Julie's disappearance or murder, please call the number listed in the show notes. If you have a loved one or friends who live in the Seattle area around the 80s or 90s, please also inform them of this case. I understand this is an older case and it feels impossible, but cold cases are getting solved more regularly now, and it would be extremely helpful to her family and to the community to bring her killer to justice. Thank you for your time today, and please remember to be safe. Till next time.